seen this whole thing taking place in Vrindavan, and this saying Krishna and his flame, and this wives of all these demigods, they are so fortunate. As soon as they see Krishna and Krishna's beautiful form, they become maddened in, they become mad for Krishna. And then they show all this bhava for Krishna, and then they get painted in the lap of their husband. The gopis are witnessing all this scene. These demigods, they don't have such fortune. They are there, but they are not painted, and probably they have not even heard this flute voice also. They have not heard this also. Only this wives of demigods have heard them. Why they have come here, the demigods? Just on the plea of their wife. Because their wife said, oh, you come here. So they are there. So they are, probably they would have seen Krishna being Gocharan for a few minutes, but nothing happened in their heart because they don't have bhakti. This bhakti is only in the heart of this wives of demigods. So gopis are witnessing all these things, and they are glorifying the fortune of all these wives of demigods. And we also see that in the pastime of Chitraketu, when he becomes Dhritarashtra and is fighting with Indra, in that pastime, he is praying for that in the mood of gopis. But Indra, when Krishna comes in the form of Vamandev to him, and he is just praying for his heavenly pleasures. That's all. So these demigods, they are always unfortunate. They will never aspire for this thing. But their wives, they are more fortunate than the demigods. And they are seeing what Krishna is doing. Krishna is having all kind of dancing and all playing moves with gopis. And if sometimes some of the gopis, their ankle bells get off their, get off from their feet, then Krishna even, he is trying that also. So they say, what fortune these wives of demigods have, because they are, nobody stopping them to witness all this beautiful pastime of Krishna, and even there, their husbands are cooperating with them. So may we have this fortune. As soon as we start to, we want to go to meet Krishna, and so much of skills are there. Our husbands, our mother-in-laws, and then sister-in-laws, and nobody will come. So many people come and they ask lists of questions, and if somehow or another we're trying to escape, and the husband will come up with their stick, so they're comparing their misfortune and the fortune of the wives of demigods. And this, what is the beautiful form of Krishna? Is so beautiful that the whole planetary system, three worlds, they are becoming attracted by the beauty of Krishna. And even Narayana, who is the husband of Lakshmi, Lakshmi is extremely beautiful. Even he is hypnotized when he sees the beauty of Krishna. So what to say of when they are witnessing this wonderful scene, Krishna in Vrindavan. And on top of that, Srimati Radhika, which is the source of all the Lakshmi, Sarva Lakshmi Mai Radha. And even so, Lakshmi, Lakshmi, Mahalakshmi, and even Srimati Radhika is source of all this Lakshmi. And then Krishna has his left hand on the shoulders of Srimati Radhika. Such a wonderful scene is being witnessed by the wives of the demigods. And these gopis, they are all witnessing with their eyes of their bhava. And what happens next to this wives of demigods? When they hear the flute of Krishna, as soon as Krishna plays this flute, they just become maddened and their heart feeling sick. So much stimulated, so much they become extremely exposed, and their clothes fall off and they just faint in the lap of their husband. And gopis, they witness all the things. And then they say, oh, our misfortune, and this demigod wives, they are so fortunate. We should understand here, there is a word quoted in this verse as Anushilan, Shin, which is a very significant meaning here, meaning that this gopis' love for Krishna and Krishna's love for gopis, which is Kama, named as Kama in the verse, is not an odd, this is actually prema. It's not a mundane affair at all. And it is devoid of all selfishness and self-satisfaction. It's devoid completely of that. They just want to please each other. But who can understand this? Only these gopis. They can understand, they can relate. That is relative also. Nobody else. It's even difficult for Narada, it's difficult for Uddhava also. anybody who is in the male form or in the consciousness that I am man, he cannot understand this.
Only this gopi.
Bipi Shankar, he desires to go in the rasa and he has to go in the form of a gopi.
He could not go there in the form of a man. So anybody who is of this consciousness, he can never understand this.
And then and again they are comparing their fortune with his wives of the demigods. And then they say, oh, if so, but we see that when these gopis, some of the gopis after saying this thing, then they're comparing themselves with the fortune of the wives of demigods, then they're saying that few of the gopis were not able to go to meet Krishna. They were being stopped by their husband. But this was outwardly. Actually, they were stopped by Yugmaya, because these gopis had also got children with their husband. So how is it possible they're having love with Krishna, at the same time they're having children? So it is never possible. It will become Rasabhas Dosh. So, but at that moment when they are in separation, and now when they are deeply thinking of this pastime Krishna and they are witnessing this scene here, they are all auspicious and inauspicious anarsas goes away. Shubha and Shubha anarsas, they go away. Here, one more question. This is a Siddha platform. The gopis are perfected completely. So what kind of auspicious and inauspiciousness left there? Then it said that this auspiciousness and inauspiciousness is not manmindra in the case of a sadhaka. It is different. This inauspiciousness is the separation which they are feeling for Krishna. They are not able to meet Krishna. This is separation. And what is auspiciousness? Auspiciousness is that they have they have desire to meet Krishna, but they are unable to meet him due to their upstate on the way. But both of these things, they are rectified by the arrangement of Yog Maya. Why? When they are unable to go, then they think so, in thinking of Krishna, they are so much absorbed that Krishna, they take Krishna in their heart through their thoughts and embrace him. Mm-hmm. So all the inauspiciousness and auspiciousness is completely eradicated by this. And then later on in the rasa, they reach in the rasa first of all, and all the gopis reach later on. And all this anartha is also being eradicated by the association of Nitya Siddha gopis, because their bhava now is being completely becoming more thick and completely getting purified and contaminated of all impurities by the association of this Nitya Siddha gopis, and it's becoming completely pure. And Yogmaya had completely opened all the doors for them. What does it mean by opening doors? Kapat Khodiye. What does it mean by that? That they open doors. Even in the case of now they are comparing themselves with the cows. They are witnessing all cows. When they see this beautiful form of Krishna, and they hear this beautiful this wonderful sound of the flute, and then their ears stand on their ends, and they just become like cups, and they are hearing this voice in a very stunned manner. They are chewing grass, and this grass is they are chewing grass, but then it just stays in their neck. Doesn't go in, doesn't go out. And they just completely stunned.
statue, just like a statue. They become like a statue, and they're hearing, and they're seeing the beautiful form of Krishna also, and these gopis are witnessing this thing, and there are lakhs and lakhs of cows. Nanda Baba's cows, how many? There are 9 lakhs. And then Sri Ram's cows, how many cows are there? 11 lakhs. And then apart from that also there are billions and billions of cows. So how is possible that all the cows are they are able to take darshan of Krishna?
This is the arrangement of Yoga Maya. Each and every cow is seeing Krishna is in front of them, like that.
And then, what to say of this calf? They are taking, they are drinking milk from the udder, but as soon as they hear this flute,
their small ears, they also sing in their hands. And they are just in this posture, they keep singing it, and the milk just stays in them.
And then they just get absorbed in hearing this wonderful sound of the flute. Not just this, what to say of this cows and calves? The immovable things start becoming movable, and the movable things, they start becoming, they become immovable. This is the potency. Later on, this all things have been discussed elaborately in this Rasa Panchadhyaya chapter. So gopis are praying that we may have this fortune, but we cannot have in this lifetime. So they are praying when we die, and next lifetime when we take our birth, we desire that we may become either these cows, and if not cows, then we may become calves and have such a fortune. And again they are saying, telling something about their position, and they are saying that how their husband is stopping. They say they are so cruel that they are always thinking how they want to stop us from existence. If we are going out, then they will say, where you are going out? And if we are dressed very nicely and we have been all singers, so, oh, what is the reason today you are so dressed up so beautifully? And if someday we are not dressed properly, then say, oh, you are not dressed properly, what's the point? Why are you not dressed properly? And then if they are coming from anywhere, they say, where you are coming from? Some or another, by actual reason or artificial reason, some or another they want to bother them, unnecessarily, they are saying. These all symptoms are of Madan Modan also. All these gopis which they are telling their own tradition, these are also symptoms of Madan and Modan stages. This is also, this Madan and Modan, this is being discussed in the 7th verse of Shishastra by Mahaprabhu. He is saying, Yuga Aitam Nimeshena. This is very similar here, this gopis which, the bhavas which gopis are depicting here. And then again, just we have this kind of feelings anytime in our heart, or such this desperateness in our heart, that sometimes we may say even for once that, oh, my life is wasted, I don't have this kind of vision, I can't see this, all these things are happening and I can't see them. Or I may desire, oh, I may become a cow in Vrindavan. Sometimes we desire, never. Or I become a cow. If not that, we may sometimes, we don't even desire that we may become a creeper there. We should not think like that, that creepers in Vrindavan, they are inferior to anybody else. All of them, they are Satchidanand, and they are favorable to the pastime, for the pastimes of Krishna. And then he gives one example. How? In one of the pastimes, Srimati Radhika, she has this man for Krishna, and now she is not talking to him anymore. And then he is trying his best to please her. And he's tried his all these and these he can try. He played so nicely his flute also, but nothing is working to him. And Radhika is so angry that she's not even looking towards him. She's just walking in the opposite direction. And then she's walking so fast. And then suddenly one snake comes out from the one of the punches. And he wants to bite Srimati Radhika. And then Srimati Radhika gets scared and runs back, and then she embraces it. So this snake, he becomes stable.
Or ontology of knowledge, aesthetics. So that he explained many of these things in Priti Sandarbha as well as in Bhakti Sandarbha, that how the statements of Bhagavatam, because some statements in Bhagavatam they seem to appear that there is a rasabhas. And he will give an explanation for all those, that how Srimad Bhagavatam is free from any such defects. So in those places Jiva Goswami will give his own interpretation. So here he actually also indicates that his purpose is in explaining according to the will of Srimad Mahaprabhu and not according to somebody else, but as a Vaishnava he has respect for all other senior Vaishnavas. Now he says that as the Advaita doctrines are well known, they need not be delineated here. Now because this Srimad Bhagavatam is going to speak about devotion, as is very clear from his Mangalacharan invocation as well as other analysis which he has done, so definitely he will defeat the impersonal philosophy. But generally it is a custom when you want to defeat some philosophy, you also have to state that philosophy so that reader understands that your arguments are against this philosophy. Jiva Goswami has not done that here. He says this impersonalism is well known to people, so I'm not going to waste my time writing that. I'll straightforward start giving philosophy which contradicts that. So this is the end of this section. Then he comes to next 28. Here he gives the source for his quotations. In Srimad Bhagavatam, this Sandarbhas, he has given many quotations. So what is the source and validity of these quotations? He states it here very clearly so that later on people don't create problem. Oh, this is not found, that is not found, or he is making his own. The scholars have so many different ways to find faults, modern scholars now. So Jiva Goswami is very clear in his words. He says, and here the authoritative verse of Sruti, the Puranas, etc. will be quoted just as I have seen them. So he says that I will quote verses as I am seeing them. As I mentioned, Jiva Goswami had a big library. So he is quoting as he is studying. Is not manufacturing just to support his ideas, because this claim is given by many scholars against Sri Madhvacharya that he composed many verses just to propagate his philosophy. They are meant to establish the validity of the various interpretations presented by me and not the validity of the words of the Bhagavatam. That is another very important point he makes. He says these quotations and references I will give to support the interpretation which I am giving. And don't think that I am giving these quotations to support what Bhagavatam is saying. Not that he quotes a verse from Bhagavatam and then supports it by so many other quotations. No, Bhagavatam is already accepted as the topmost pramana. And there is no need to support it. But what he is saying, that he will support by various quotations from Sruti, from Smriti, from Samhitas, and so on. So his bulk of his verses are coming from the Purana which he has seen, but he also quotes many verses which he has not seen, and that he states here. In some cases I have been unable to personally see certain verses, and so have taken them from the Bhagavat Tatparya, Bharat Tatparya, and Brahma Sutra Bhashya, etc. of Venerable Madhvacharya, the ancient preceptor of the doctrine of Tattvavad, who advanced many distinctively Vaishnava doctrines, who are chief among knowers of the Vedas and their meaning, and whose disciples and grand disciples include Vijayadhyaya Brahmatirtha Vyastirtha, etc. of great renown in the south and elsewhere. So there are many verses which he takes from the books of Madhvacharya. These are some of his writings. Madhvacharya wrote about 39 books. They are popularly known as Mula Grantha. Then this includes Bhagavat Tatparya, Bharat Tatparya, Brahma Sutra Bhashya, known as Purna Parga Bhashya, and Pramana, and many other books he wrote. So there are many quotations which are found in these books and which were not available to Jiva Goswami. And the reason is that many of these books were lost by the time of Jiva Goswami. he will make a mention of some of these books which are not available at his time. So he is going to quote from Madhvacharya's books. And coincidentally, today is Madhvacharya's appearance day. So it's very appropriate that it came here. He is giving a lot of respect here to Madhvacharya. He says that he is actually the knower of the Vedas and the meaning of the Vedas, and he has many great disciples. These are very big scholars, Vijayadhyaya, Brahmatirtha, Vyastirtha. Especially Vyastirtha was a very renowned scholar. He wrote a famous book known as Nyayamrita, in which he defeated impersonalism completely, top to bottom. He did not leave anything which he did not defeat in it. And for some time, Mayavadis were hiding Nyayamrita. But then later on came Madhusudan Saraswati from Bengal. And he composed the book Advait Siddhi. And in that Advait Siddhi, he again established impersonalism very strongly. So of course, after that, this went on for some time. By the time he wrote Advait Siddhi, Vyastirtha was very old. So he did not refute, but he sent his disciple. I think his name was Ramchandra Tirtha. And this Ramchandra Tirtha came and studied Advait Siddhi from Madhusudan Saraswati. And after studying, when his study was over, he presented a refutation of Advait Siddhi as Guru Dakshina. And then he went away. So this refutation and counter refutation, this went on for a long time. These books are available actually, this Advait Siddhi, Nyayamrita, and then his refutations. But they are very deep in philosophy, very minute and very deep thinking they do. So then he says, having mastered the other scriptures by the light of Vedanta and having seen different scriptures in various parts of the country, I will examine these and will speak according to the view of Bhagavan Vyas. The Lord Narayana himself who spoke Mahabharata. This is a quotation from Bharat Tatparya written by Madhvacharya. In the beginning of this book he writes that I have studied many scriptures. Because Madhvacharya actually travelled to many parts of India just to gather scriptures. And I think it was not Vyastirtha, but somebody else, I forget his name. There was an Acharya who appeared after Madhvacharya. He was actually the bull in which Madhvacharya was carrying books from Kashmir. But then the Brahmanas became upset that he is taking the scriptures. So what Madhvacharya studied, did that he took the scriptures and he recited them loudly and memorized everything. And then he gave the scriptures back. But the bulls also heard, and then they appeared in Madhva Sampradaya as very popular acharyas and wrote commentary on the books of Madhvacharya. Jatirtha. He wrote, he is another very famous acharya in Madhva Sampradaya. Right after Madhvacharya, he is one of the most popular, and he wrote commentaries on Madhvacharya's books. So that's why he said that he had very renowned disciples. So Madhvacharya says here that he travelled and studied this literature, and then he is writing now this Mahabharata Tatparya according to the opinion of Bhagavan Vyas, who is Lord Narayana himself. Because Vyasadeva actually wrote his books and then he went to Badrinath or Badrikashram in the Himalayas, and he met Lord Vyas there and he showed his books for verification. And after that he composed sutras on the explanation of Vyasa. That's why he is considered as direct disciple of Vyasa. Otherwise he was initiated by Achyut Preksha, who actually came in impersonalist sampradaya. The Sruti texts which will be quoted from Madhva will be Chaturveda Sikha, etc., and Puranic texts will include those persons of Puranas, such as Garuda, which are no longer available. The Samhitas will include the Mahasamhita, and the Tantras will include the Tantra Bhagavata and Brahma Tarka. So these are some of the books which are not to be seen now, and they are not available even to Jiva Goswami. Chaturveda Sikha is a part of Vedas and it is lost completely. There are some parts of Garuda Purana as well as Vayu Purana which are not available now. They are lost. And some Samhitas, Mahasamhita, and many other books which are available to Jiva Goswami are not available now. And same thing was there with Jiva Goswami. He could not see Tantra Bhagavat. This Tantra Bhagavat is part of, is mentioned in Hasis Pancharatra and supposed to be a commentary of Srimad Bhagavatam. And it is a very authoritative scripture, probably spoken by Lord Shiva himself. Because most of the Tantras are spoken by Shiva. And as you know, these Yamalas, Vishnu Yamal, Brahma Yamal, none of these are available. So this is how he is going to now analyze or write Sandarbhas. And up to this point, this section on Pramana is over. That means deciding what is the valid means, what is the means for understanding valid knowledge has been established, and that is Srimad Bhagavatam. So from now onwards, he will start analyzing. So this is one complete section of this book, and there will be a test up to this tomorrow. So now in the next section, 29, he starts analyzing what is actually the import of Srimad Bhagavatam, what is its real essence which it wants to propound. Does it want to speak about Dvaitva, Advaitva, or Vaishnavism, or what, monism? And for this, he used a very wonderful technique. Unique procedure has been utilized by Jiva Goswami. Although he seems to be performing Mangalacharan again, because this is the next section of the book. But what he does is that he actually quotes a verse which is a prayer to Sukadeva Goswami spoken by Sut Goswami. And this verse acts like an invocation here also in this book, as well as prayer to Sut Goswami, prayer by Sut Goswami to Sukadeva Goswami, and therefore Jiva Goswami is also praying to Sukadeva Goswami indirectly by reciting his prayer, because Sukadeva Goswami is the one who knows Srimad Bhagavatam. So by reciting this prayer, he is actually praying to Sukadeva Goswami so that he can convey the proper message of Bhagavatam through the Sandarbhas. But the real thing which he wants to mention and conclude from this prayer is what is there in Srimad Bhagavatam. And thus he says that now Sutta gives a brief description of the import of this just described Bhagavata to Shaunaka, while offering salutations to Shuka by reflecting on the ideal lodged in the heart of its narrator. So basically Jiva Goswami's style is that he will now analyze what is heart of Sukadeva Goswami, what is inside his heart, what is his faith, where is his faith situated in. And then he will analyze the heart of Vyasadeva, where is his faith, what is his intention. Because if we understand the intention of the speaker and the writer, then we can understand the real essence of the book. Because whatever they say, the intention will be same. When we use different words, different allegories, different stories, narrations, or teachings, whatever, but the message will be what is their real intention. So this is what he wants to analyze now. And for this first he quotes this verse from Bhagavatam 12:12:68, which explains the mood of Sukadeva Goswami both before he recited Bhagavatam and after he recited Bhagavatam. So he says, "I bow down to the son of Vyasa, the destroyer of all sins, whose mind was filled with Brahmananda, and thus his mind was free from all worldly thoughts, has had his heart drawn toward the enchanting lilas of Ajita Krishna, and who has compassionately enfolded this Purana, revolving around him, which illumines reality like a lamp." So here he mentions few things. First thing is that Sukadeva Goswami swasat nibhrita cheta tad vidhista bhava. To begin with, he was completely steeped or soaked in Brahmananda. He was in Brahmananda to begin with. But he kicked it away. Why? Because he heard some verses from Bhagavatam. Then he studied Bhagavatam, and what is this Bhagavatam? Ajita Ruchira Leela Krishna Saram. His mind was completely enchanted, attracted by the beautiful pastimes of Lord Ajita, which are described in the Bhagavatam. And then when his mind was completely captivated by Lord's pastimes, obviously he threw away his attachment to Brahmananda. And he was so absorbed in Srimad Bhagavatam that then he spoke this out of mercy for the welfare of humanity. And this Bhagavatam is Tattva Deepa Puranam. This is the lamp of Tattva. The Tattvas are coming out. The light is the Tattva, the essence. Tattva means the essential nature of something is called Tattva. Tattva Brahmani Yathartheca. Tattva means Lord, Tattva means the reality. So this Srimad Bhagavatam is the lamp of reality. It is emanating the rays which will give light and dispel the darkness. So this is the one. Therefore it says, Akhila Vrijani Dhanam Vyasa Srimam. He says, "I bow down to Vyasa Srimam, son of Vyas, who can destroy all sins." How he can destroy all sins? By giving the nectar of Srimad Bhagavatam. Because when we hear Srimad Bhagavatam, then heart becomes completely illumined, so much so that Lord Himself comes and becomes situated in the heart. So, from this, the significance is that he gave up attachment to Brahman and he developed attachment to the pastimes of Krishna. That means now his faith is not established in Brahman anymore. His faith is situated in Lord Krishna and his pastimes. So therefore when he speaks, he is not trying to glorify Brahman, but he will glorify Krishna and his activities, because this is what attracted his heart. When you get something wonderful and very pleasing, if you know somebody who is very friendly, that is what you want to tell him, not something which you have rejected. So this is the faith of Sukadeva Goswami. And now he gives the commentary of Sridhar Swami here. As you said before, that he will quote the commentary of Sridhar Swami. According to Sridhar's commentary, he offers salutations to his venerable guru, to him whose mind is filled with its own bliss alone, and thus who has cast aside all thought, worry, and who, despite being of such a disposition, has had heart which steadfastly dwelled in its own bliss, attracted by the enchanting lilas of Ajita. So Sridhar Swami has also acknowledged this fact that Sukadeva Goswami's heart was completely absorbed in pleasure of Brahman, but he gave up that and he became attracted to Krishna Lila. So Sridhar Swami understands that the pleasure of bhakti, bhaktananda, is much superior to brahmananda. I bow down to him who unfolded the Bhagavata, the lamp of truth, the illuminator of the highest reality. The three verses from the second skandha uttered by Sukha himself should also be examined in this connection. So there are three verses which Sukhdev Goswami spoke in the second canto, first chapter, text 7, 8 and 9. And he has said there that Idam Bhagavatam Nama Purana Brahma Samhitam Adhitavana Vyaparadav Pitur Vyapayanadha. That this Srimad Bhagavatam is Brahma Samhitam. This is harmonious with the Vedanta Sutra or with the Vedas. And I studied this at the end of Dwapara from my father. So he actually went through study, and then in the next verse he says, Paramishthatopi Nargunde Uttam Sloka Lilaya Grihita Cheta Rajase Akhyana Yad Adhitavan. Says, although I have completely situated Paramishtha without any material desires, no tinge of any material desires, in Nirguna Brahman, Nargunde Api, but my heart was completely captivated by Uttam Sloka Lila, by the beautiful pastimes of Uttam Sloka. And then, when my heart was attracted, I studied this Srimad Bhagavatam from my father. So this is spoken by Sukhdev Goswami himself. The expression, all sins in this verse, should be understood to signify aversion or indifference to such a feeling of attraction to Krishna. Thus, a related principle is found here, namely that the holy Ajita, distinguished by enchanting lilas, is himself superior to the bliss of Brahman. And it will become clear by examining the samadhi of Vyasa that Ajita, in its fullest aspect, is primarily known as Krishna himself. So now, Guru Goswami writes here that this is the principle which we understand from this verse, that the bliss of God realization is superior to bliss of Brahman realization. And this Ajita here refers to Krishna. This will become clear when we analyze Samadhi of Vyasa beginning from the next section. It thus follows that the goal of life, technically known as Prayojana, is nothing less than the joy which springs from love of Him, engendering attachment of such kind as Sukha is to him, and that the Abhidhaya also is nothing less than the worship of him, characterized by listening to accounts of his divine sport, etc., and rendering love of such a kind for him. According to the Brahma Vaivarta Purana, the appellation Vyasasuna, the son of Vyasa, is indicative of the fact that Sukha, due to a boon from Krishna, was untouched by Maya from his very birth. So this Priyajana and Abhidhaya is deduced from this verse. Priyajana is love of God, and Abhidhaya, or the process, is sadhana bhakti, and this is by hearing, because Sukhdev Goswami became attracted by hearing. So he says that is what is mentioned here, and this is what we have to take through this process of hearing Lord Krishna's activities, which will give rise to love of God. Now, as far as Sukhdev Goswami is studying this Bhagavatam, there is mention, all the Guru Goswami says here Brahma Bhagavata, but this story is not found in Brahma Bhagavata anymore, but there is a story in Devi Bhagavatam, and we know this story. There is a painting in Bhagavatam depicting this, that Sukhdev Goswami, he did not want to come out from the womb of his mother, said, if I go out, I will fall into Maya. He considered himself very safe there, inside the womb. So when Vyasadeva has to go to Dwarka and call Krishna, and Krishna came and gave a warranty that Maya will not touch you, that is my blessing, you can come out. So Sukhdev Goswami, he took birth, but as soon as he took birth, he ran away. So if I stay here, then this is my father, this is my mother, and then I will get into the whole scene, and I will forget, then my father will get me married, and bas. After that, so when he went away, Vyasa was running behind him, my dear son, but son was not listening, because son said, I am nobody's son, I am Brahman, and Brahman is no one's son, because it is only one. So then he went away, and Vyasa was very much mortified, and especially he wanted to teach him Bhagavatam. So he devised the technique, because Vyasadeva knew that the only thing which can attract him is Bhagavatam, because Bhagavatam is so wonderful. Just by hearing it, one becomes ecstatic. So he had some disciples, and he told them some famous verses from Bhagavatam which describe the beauty of Krishna. And he said that whenever you go to forest to recite this verse, and no animal will attack you, because in the forest there are animals and ghosts, and the ghosts will run away. But if there is a human ghost who follows you after hearing this verse, then catch him and drink. So one day when they were reciting, especially whenever they were afraid, they would recite these verses. So they saw Sukhdev Goswami, and he was wandering in the forest. He looked like a ghost. So they immediately started this, chanting these verses. And when Sukhdev Goswami heard these verses, he was completely flabbergasted, because he has never heard anything like this before in his life. So he ran behind them. And these disciples, they were running, and Sukhdev Goswami was running. Finally he caught them. He says, where are you running? Recite these verses. So he says, we cannot recite more. You have to come to our guru. He says, why? So because he has 18,000 verses like this. He has only given us 3 or 4. Now if you want, you come. So that's how Sukhdev Goswami came back. And that's what he says, that my heart was captivated. Parinishthitavati nargunya uttam sloka lilaya, that my heart was captivated by these verses, and then I studied this from my father. So after that he studied Srimad Bhagavatam. So this actually shows the importance of Srimad Bhagavatam.
Vyasa
Veti, Sukha Veti, Raja Veti, Vanava means Parikshit Maharaj. King Parikshit. He is the one who heard. There is a different version of this verse. There is another verse which says that Sukhdev knows, I know.
Yes.
Lord Shiva is saying that Aham Veti, Sukha Veti, Vyasa Veti, Vanava. I know. Sukhdev Goswami knows, whether Vyasadev knows or does not know, I don't know. But Sridhar Swami knows.
That's another
quote,
right?
Yeah, there is different version, but the verse which I quoted, I read this in the commentary.
But the other verse is not one of that.
I have not read that verse anywhere, but this verse I have seen in one commentary. Commentary by Vamsidhar, who is a great follower of Sridhar. He actually wrote commentaries on Sridhar's commentary. Bhavarth Deepika Prakash.
His explanation of Sukadeva Goswami, which is attracted by hearing the verses,
where is from? Yuga Sangha says Brahma Vaivart Puran, but it is not there. Devi Bhagavatam, the story can be Krishna. Yeah. And this is clear from these verses. Yeah, these verses from second canto, which are spoken by Sukhdev Goswami, and this prayer by Sut Goswami, otherwise it doesn't make any sense that when did he kick away the impersonalism. He kicked away only when he heard Bhagavatam. I never heard that version.
What is the verse?
2, 1, 7, 8, and 9.
Those are the verses that they were chanting and
attracted. No. These are the 3 verses which Sudha Goswami is relating this story himself.
I mean the one that attracted.
The verses which he heard first are not mentioned anywhere, but I've heard from scholars that one verse is from 10th canto, and this is how does it begin? Sapada Ramanam. This is the verse when Krishna is entering inside Vrindavan along with cowherd bears and cows. In fact, there is a painting depicting that verse in our Bhagavatam book. But Karnayo Karnikaram. Baraha Pidam Natvar Vapu Karnayo Karnikaram. It goes like this. Describes the beauty of Krishna. That Krishna is wearing this peacock feather and he is having a flower kane, but he seems to have only one flower on the ear. You see, in Braj there is a tradition, they put flower on the ear. So he says that there is one kanayo karnikaram. There is one flower, but he says,